The opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the official position of Impromafia. Meaning, if you've got a problem, email Dan, not Wade.
Impromafia presents And Time!
Welcome to And Time, a podcast for improvisers and aspiring improvisers. I'm Dan Beeston, Impromafia's resident tech guy and web guy.
And I'm Natalie Bohensky, a player and all-round kino who attempts sometimes to look after the media.
Welcome, Natalie. It's good to have you in again.
Oh, glad to be here in my spare bedroom. Sorry, I shouldn't say that. In the And Time podcast headquarters.
In the atrium.
In the atrium, deep in the underground volcanic lair. In Maruka.
You're implying that we're that evil with our impro?
We are evil. We're evil enough to have a lair. I think that's true. Sorry, can we start the podcast again? I've fucked up.
End time!
Sorry.
Welcome to End Time! Well, why don't we discuss what's been happening in the world of impro this last couple of weeks?
It's been a crazy week. Crazy, crazy busy. We've had the first long-form show at the Brisbane Arts Theatre, Wake of Simon Chesterfield. We've had the first open mic improv night at O'Malley's Pub in the Brisbane Queen Street Mall.
Yep.
And we've also had other bits and pieces going on, including a comedy debate that you and I were part of, as well as Al and Greg.
Now, Tiffany is our stage manager at the Arts Theatre.
Yes.
You guys have known her for a while through some other plays that you've been doing.
She stage managed The Truth, which Greg directed and Wade and I were in earlier in the year.
Mm-hmm.
So we met her there, and when we began doing shows during the play at the Arts Theatre, the impro shows, she came on board as our stage manager, which is fantastic, and she does such a good job. And I think that everyone will know that the fact we have an actual stage manager who can communicate with the lighting box, and we have a lighting person, all of a sudden we're in a proper theatre with proper theatre people.
Now, she contacted me she contacted us.
Yes.
To ask us if we'd like to help out with some sort of performance that were going on.
She's part of a...
She didn't give us much information. No.
She joined the Debating Society at Griffith University, and they were having their big gala association night.
They were advertising their stuff, because it's only just started up again. It's apparently been dead for a couple of years.
So they wanted to have a big night with food and drinks and showcase debating and comedy and things like that. So we got pulled in as the so-called comedians, which was really interesting, the fact that we referred to as comedians, because
it always makes me anxious.
It does, because when you say improviser, I mean, you obviously aim for comedy most of the time.
And someone goes, what's an improviser?
Well, that's true.
And then you get to talk about yourself.
Yes, exactly, Dan.
Which
we all know.
Our favourite thing to do.
It's everyone's favourite thing to do in Impro Mafia. Hence this podcast. But when people refer to you as a comedian, all of a sudden there's a standard that you were expected or you expect yourself to reach.
Make me laugh, funny girl.
That's right. So it wasn't a bad thing. It was a lovely thing to be called a comedian. You know, the idea that other people find me funny is obviously very welcome.
I've been introduced as an actor before as well, and I'm just as anxious.
Improviser is a nice blend, isn't it?
Blend where you don't have to be 100% good at either of them.
Yeah, and you're able to then explain it through your performance, and people go, oh, that's what an improviser is. And if it was a particularly funny night, then you say, yes, well, we improvise and we make up comedy. But if it was a particularly truthful night at the theatre or at the play or at the impro, you can say, no, we improvise the truth and we improvise
and we make up art.
We make up art. So
now let us have some canapés and red wine
and
write some poetry.
Yes.
I remember back in the day that writing poetry was actually a euphemism for when someone broken up and locked themselves away. So that because they didn't want to communicate with anyone. You go, oh, you know, where's Chad? Oh, Chad's writing poetry.
So it was an excellent night in the end. And
I was so anxious. I was the only one to go along to the meeting.
Well, I wanted
because
to.
Because somebody bailed and then somebody else bailed.
No, well, I wanted to, but it was at 6 p.m. and I only finished work at 6 p.m. and I would have had to cross town. And by the time... So I didn't go.
Well, I went in there and we sit down and I felt like... Well, I've never been to university and suddenly I'm sitting down like I'm about to go do a lecture. And there's a woman out the front and everyone's sitting down and she goes, all right, well, let's discuss what we're going to do. And I'm like, have I been roped into some sort of uni course? Because I didn't know what it was.
That's right. University is like Amway. They get you in, and then they say, we can all share in the education. All you need to do is go out and get two other people to join up to university. And then through their fees, you'll get fees, and it's a giant pyramid scheme of education.
I think that's how the education system works in Finland.
Well, that and a lot of practical shooting work. Sorry.
Practical? Oh, God!
Yes, I'm
sorry.
No,
I see where you're going there.
That was really inappropriate. My
just
apologies.
Caught up
to
on my current events.
Apologies to Finland, a place
I was
I'd
a bit anxious
like
because
be.
They'd written a skit for us to do, and the word skit is a big red flag to me
from
the get-go.
I read it because you sent it to me, and I read it, and I thought, look, that's a fair enough little skit to do. It was a little skit based on the stereotypes of universities, so the idea that students who go to
there were some clever
bombs,
ideas in there, yeah.
Exactly, but I think what made us nervous is that because we're improvisers with bunny ears, we didn't feel entirely comfortable, particularly since we had no time to get together and rehearse this.
Yeah.
So we would have ended up on stage with scripts, just reading it, and it could have potentially fallen flat. So I think you came up with a good compromise, which was to take the ideas of people as university caricatures and turn that into an improv scene, which is what you
ended up doing. And what we did, what we ended up doing was about 15 minutes of improv. I put together a couple of games that were specifically tailored to the night.
I think that was really good because it shows that improv as a potentially, I mean, this was obviously a student do, but as a potentially corporate do, is really achievable because you can really target and work out what is going to please the audience and work that into your routine. But still relying on improv because the first game that you did was have us play out the history of debating. So you'd essentially written some links. You know, the first debate was here and we would then get up and improvise that. So it didn't matter that if, you know, what we did was obviously different to what you might have thought when writing the links.
Yeah.
It was still funny, and we were still getting suggestions from the audience to do that. So it just shows that you could do that about anything. You could potentially go to a stockbroking firm and go, right, here's the history of stockbroking, and start with the first amoeba trading shares in
Although debating was a particularly good one to do because when you're debating, there's a lot of wit involved and there's a lot of passion involved with arguing with someone and having a different counterpoint. So it makes for a very easy scene.
Mm. And it was a lot of fun, and the audience really, really enjoyed it. They were very responsive, and they got into it, which was great. So.
The sad thing is I think we were playing to a bigger crowd that night than we haven't ever, ever before.
This is where we need to go. We need to go to places where people don't expect you, and there's heaps of them, and then you show up and you do a good show, and all of a sudden... Because what happened was like a few people who came who from Griffith or other unis who'd gone to this night came along to our show on the Sunday night. I'm not sure how many. I'm sure probably, you know, maybe two or three. But, hey, that's two or three people we didn't have beforehand. So it's a really good thing to note and to remember and to hopefully work on for the future. Al and I then took part in the comedy debate later in the evening, which was really amusing.
That looked
funny.
Like a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. And I'd been very nervous because I knew the topic, but I'd jotted out a few ideas that morning and added a bit of detail in the afternoon. But I was working, so I could only sort of go, oh, that's something I could talk about and write a line down. And it was only when I got home and I was getting changed that I sort of finished the structure of a basic speech, thinking, okay, I could make a joke about this and I could say this and that might be funny, and got down there, promptly left my speech on a table somewhere, and it was found by a member of the negative team. I was on the affirmative team, and a member of the negative team came into the dressing room, the sort of little room we had to get ready in, and said, is this your speech? And I went, oh, thank you. And I went, you didn't read it, did you? And he pretended that he hadn't, but I think he may have glanced at it. But it was such a fun debate in the end, and people really got into it. And I was so proud of myself that I was able to entertain without having to resort to any jokes about poo, any jokes about genitalia, any jokes about various other bodily parts or functions. And I was very happy with that.
Mm.
I cracked jokes about, you know, the stock market and politics and credit card debt.
And what better venue to do so than in front of a university-educated audience in the law building?
That's right. I felt very highbrow.
Yeah, it was. If we could play to people like that all the time...
Oh, that'd be so good.
You guys would go well, and I would be out on my ass. Sorry, Dan, we don't need cock jokes anymore.
That's not true.
Put your pants on that, pop
well,
down to...
In all fairness, the so-called...
Impro gladiators.
No. Well, there's always a market, but the so-called serious debate that they'd had before the comedy debate, which we thought was going to be much, much more serious and things like that, they had three Toastmasters on one side who sort of were reasonably serious with a few jokes thrown in.
Yep.
The uni students who were on the other side were really all about the dick jokes.
They
threw in a lot of dick jokes.
Yeah, well, it was supposed to be a proper debate.
Yeah.
But
obviously, maybe proper debates involve dick jokes these days, obviously.
No, this
things
is the
have
thing.
Changed.
They had to change it when the Toastmasters said that they were happy to get involved because they'd invited them but hadn't heard back from them.
Ah.
So then the Toastmasters turned up and they went, what are we going to do? So they went, well, let's get those guys in. They can be witty and interesting. So let's give another three people a go at being comedy debaters as well.
Ah, I see.
But
so it was all comedy debaters.
But they told stories and... It was odd. I was a bit frustrated because I was actually looking forward to seeing some proper debating just as a nice counterpoint to what you guys were going to do.
Yeah, well, it was still interesting to watch because I haven't done or seen debating since I was in high school when I was captain of debating. That's right.
I was in the D team.
I was extremely cool in high school, I can tell you. Everybody wanted to be my friend. Captain of debating. That's not true at all.
And a single tear rolls down her
single manly tear.
And followed by 40 others. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back after Natalie gets over that. So, yeah, so that was the debate, and it went really well, and we got a lot of people asking who we were, and we handed out cards, and hopefully some might translate into audience numbers.
And make fun of people from up the back in the dark, where it was safe.
Because we're cowardly.
And hypocrites.
Yeah. Well, I think what was interesting is because we're all so old and crippled now, and these fresh-faced 19, 20-year-olds...
whippersnappers.
You know, getting up, and it's one of those things that was interesting with the debate, and it's something probably that is really pertinent to Impro, which is where do you target your jokes? Because we, as Impro Mafia, I guess, really have a niche built for ourselves in the Star Trek, Star Wars, Douglas Adams, Blackadder, English comedy, some American comedies. We're aged 25 to 35, really. That's kind of our age bracket.
Basically that Gen X demographic.
Gen X into Gen Y geek culture. Yeah. So we've got our niche there. But then
you make a mention about Cthulhu to our audience, they're all over it.
Yeah.
Like a swarm of ants.
If I'd got up in my talk and mentioned something about Cthulhu, Greg would have cackled up the back. You probably would have smiled. Al probably would have known what we were talking about on the other team. And everyone else would have gone, kawahoo, kawahoo, kahoo. And that would have been interesting. But it's...
And somewhere on the other side of the planet, Simon Feeney would be laughing and he wouldn't know why.
Simon Feeney's ears would burn and his beard would bristle. Hello to Simon, who's still over in Germany playing Jugger. But it's important to know where to target your jokes because in my debate, I made a joke about, firstly, Britney Spears, and that got a few cackles.
Yep.
But then I made a joke about Amy Winehouse, and that got a big laugh. So obviously, even the difference between Britney and Amy Winehouse, and Britney Spears is 26 and Amy Winehouse is 24. But obviously, just that difference is enough to get a whole generation of kids going, Britney, old school, Amy Winehouse, she's crazy.
Greg was saying that. He said, we've got a young audience. We've got a don't do any pop culture references from anything longer than 8 years ago. And then... Al had some gag.
One of his points
or something.
One of his points was all about the first three Star Wars movies, and I'm not talking about the ones that the kids would know, which are the second three, i.e. the first three, however it works, but the ones that came out first in the cinemas. So Al was talking about how he remembered those and then how the new ones sucked. I was thinking as he was saying that, I was thinking, maybe the kids don't think the new ones sucked. Maybe they think that the new ones are okay.
Most people think they realize they suck.
I don't know.
They're terrible films.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, they are, but people seem to go and see terrible films all the time. I went and saw Journey to the Center of the Earth. And that was interesting.
Was it terrible?
It's good in the sense that they've got a really nice logical way of getting as many clothes off the female actor as they can. So they start off in Iceland, and it's, you know, 30 degrees below zero, but she's okay because she's got leggings and a nice jacket on.
So it's a two-hour striptease.
Basically, it is.
I like that.
And even Brendan Fraser at one part near the end rips the sleeves off his T-shirt. So he's ripping off to show his bulging upper arm muscles, and she's getting right down to her little tiny bike pants and singlet with the buttons undone on the singlet and the hair all long.
Suddenly I'm interested in seeing this film.
It's quite amusing, and all these different things happen, and she has to, I'll just look up here, and then you get a cleavage shot. It's just, it's incredible. And I think
Brendan Fraser peaked at George of the Jungle.
I wonder if he does any films now that aren't CGI-based blue screen. Can he act opposite a real human being instead of a blue screen?
Maybe he is CGI.
Well, he's so good-looking. He could be. He's very square-jawed, and he looks like a sort of a computer game hero, doesn't he?
It's just numbers.
It's all binary. Brendan Binary Fraser. But what were we talking about? Why do we always go off on... Yeah, pop culture.
No, we're there.
Yeah, we're on topic.
We're on target.
So
that's another Star Wars joke for everyone.
But, you know, it's one of those things about getting old, and I never understood it when I was a bit younger, when older people would go, oh, God, all these things that you listen, they're just rubbish. Why would you... I think you have to get to a point in your age where you go, this is what I know. I'm not learning anything new.
No.
I've learnt my geek culture. I'm not... You have to really work to get in so I know about you. Mm. So newer shows. I'm trying to learn now about 30 Rock from America because I've caught a few episodes and all of a sudden I'm like, this is really good. And I went and read about Tina Fey because of, you know, she looks like Sarah Palin and she's been doing the impersonations. And I went and read about her. She comes from impro. Her whole life in starting out in acting and stuff was all through impro. And I went, I want to be like her.
So there is hope for us.
If I can cross her and Deborah Frances White from London, from the Spontaneity Shop, that's what I want to be.
Ooh, I'd like to see that.
That's what I've decided. Extremely clever, extremely witty, extremely talented improviser / actor / writer. If I can combine their two powers, I could rule the universe.
Yeah. But just make sure that doesn't escape and start killing the villagers.
Yeah, I'll try.
So another thing that we've done recently is last Monday was our first open mic impro show.
Yes, and this doesn't mean that we, like someone suggested, take Mike's skills and cut him open with a scalpel and...
We'll just get him to tell personal stories about it. So didn't you used to date one of the greats, Mike? Well, let me tell you in this show.
Do you mean used to?
Hey?
Used to?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that gossip that I don't know about?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, no.
Right, so.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah. He doesn't need your pity.
I'm not pitying. Mike can feel sorry for someone having a... Do I look like I'm pitying Mike Skills? Is that what you're saying? If anything, Mike Skills should be pitying me.
Oh, he does.
Oh, okay. That's all right then. People pity me. That's fair enough.
It's all I have.
It's all I have. Maybe I should set up like a Facebook-style site where you go, be my pity friend. Anytime. I actually think that's actual Facebook. I don't think I have to. Because somehow I wound up with these like hundreds of people on Facebook. I'm pretty sure they don't like me. I just think they feel sorry for me.
There are so many people on there who I'm just like, I don't communicate with this person. I'm pretty sure you have to communicate with your friends to be friends.
Yeah, well, I just got friended by Chris Anderson. Hello to Chris Anderson if he's listening. I think he may listen sometimes to the On Time podcast.
Well, Chris Anderson.
And Time podcast, which I keep miscalling it.
Chris Anderson is the musician down at Impro Gladiators.
He's
been doing impro music for hundreds of years.
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe not that long. Don't insult the guy.
And he started doing it in Canada, where he was born.
He is a Canuck.
Yep. He's the nicest guy you would ever want to meet. I don't know what it is with impro musicians.
Maybe he's secretly a bastard. Maybe there's just a side to him we don't know.
Well, he just hasn't had that opportunity to cross us yet.
Well,
he hasn't been valuable to us.
Yeah, I think there might be something more.
I think you're onto something there.
You know, maybe the niceness is just all a facade for some really true.
Possibly
evil.
The same with all Canadians. Because they're all just a bit too nice.
They are a bit nice.
And birthplace of improv.
Yeah, what's with that?
So, open mic improv.
Open mic improv.
Down at O'Malley's.
Was our first night.
Where we used to do impro.
Yeah, and everyone has these very rose-coloured glasses of O'Malley's.
Mike does. Listen to the last podcast. Yeah, he's like,
I did. That's what made me say it. I didn't perform there that much because it was kind of during the time when I wasn't doing a huge amount with improv.
You'd pop in once every couple of months.
Yeah, primarily because of the work I was doing. It was I started at 4BC full-time, and so I was on a lot of nights, and so I just didn't get down there.
And you were still used to having sleep. Now you turn up, you're still on those weird shift hours, but you turn up anyway because
I don't care anymore.
Your brain just stopped working that way.
Well, I've been lucky since I've been back and not had I've had nights, but I haven't had a huge amount of them. But that will probably change soon, and the wind will change, and I'll be back. So that's always a concern with a weeknight show for me, because any weeknight I could be rostered on. So I'll always be checking I have to remember to check the Impro Mafia player roster site, because otherwise I'll find out that I was supposed to be playing and I'll turn up.
Oh yes, but anyway, I was in it.
Yes, this you were. Week.
It was exactly how I expected it to go.
Okay.
I'd had a huge weekend of impro and I was like, this will be like a chaser drink. Easy, don't have to worry about things. Although, forgot what it's like to be on a stage where there's only so much experience. Not that our rookies did a bad job.
They were great.
But when you're on a stage with a whole bunch of experienced people, there's a certain...
You can slack off, that's what you're saying.
Well,
isn't it?
It's not that you can slack off, but you can take risks and know that it'll all work out fine. Whereas I was taking...
Or if it doesn't, well, that's okay, because it was their fault. Whereas Indeed. When you're dealing with newer players,
suddenly
you are responsible.
I'm responsible. And so I was a bit...
To a degree, but they do have to take risks themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole fact that they're getting up is a giant risk. And, you know, the three people we had on, Alicia, Joel and Chris, did a really good job. I turned up, I think you were just starting the Do Ron Ron, so I'd missed the sort of pre-show atmos. Everyone acquitted themselves really well. I was really impressed.
Yeah.
The only problems were the same problems that we've always had with pub venues beginner players or not, which is noise.
Yeah, can't hear it. Can't hear the players.
And I was sitting up the back purposely for that reason, to listen and to hear. And I heard most people most of the time, but it was things like enunciation and clarity as well.
Yeah.
You know, you can hear people, but you can't understand what they're saying. And for some of our newer players, that was a problem, mostly because they're new. And they'll get that as they come along and they come and watch, which I hope they do, their fellow players play, and you'll start to understand, oh, I see, it's not just a matter of volume, it's also a matter of being understood, because I could hear that people were talking, but I couldn't work
out. Sometimes
they'd
ramble. Yeah. What is he saying? I could hear all the words.
The importance of being really clear and simple. And Alicia actually asked me after the show for constructive feedback, and which I always feel very nervous about giving, because I never feel like I'm in a position to give feedback to anybody about anything.
I love it. I love it.
I always feel bad.
Yeah, let me tell you where you're fucked, mate.
No. The problem is I always worry that I'll then get up on stage and make the exact same, you know, mistake in inverted commas or whatever.
It's funny. Whenever it's during notes and Wade's backstage and has feedback that's negative, he'll go, oh, and there's this problem we're having of this problem. Oh, and I do it all the time too. And he did, and I realised that there was a pattern emerging. Whenever he'd give bad feedback, he'd say, oh, I do it all the time too. And I'm like, you don't do that all the time.
Yeah. Well, it's a way of bringing yourself to the same, putting yourself on the same level. The only thing I said to Alicia, which was, I phrased it this way. I said, you don't need to summit Everest, just get to base camp. Don't overcomplicate what you have to do.
No.
Because there's only a small amount of people in the world who'll ever climb to Everest base camp, let alone the summit. So if you get to Everest base camp, you're still ahead of a huge amount of the population. So by getting on stage and performing, you're already ahead of a whole heap of people who maybe would like to do that or think it's pretty cool that you do that, but never would. So my thing to them was, just because I notice sometimes people in scenes or in song games, there was a bit of that too, people were trying to be really clever or not that they were trying to be funny, but they just wanted to do their best so much that they were kind of making it harder for themselves. Mm. And you don't need to do that. This is the thing. They weren't playing badly at all. It was just, you know, they wanted to play so well. What I wanted to say was just, you know, relax and keep it as simple as you can, because you're already doing well. The simpler you keep it, particularly in a pub venue with the noise, if you can restrict your dialogue and your, you know, if you're doing a song, don't worry about having these outstanding poetic lyrics that will make people cry.
Some of the best advice I was given with Impro was be average. Don't try to be better than you are. Just be average. Don't suck.
Yeah, I think...
Because if you try really hard, you're a try-hard.
No, I don't think it's bad to try hard. I just think that you don't need to make it harder for you.
No, if you put too much on you and you're trying to do your very best, you're going to freak yourself out.
Yeah,
and you're
exactly.
You're not going to be listening to your other players and stuff.
Or
you'll do your best by thinking about being average and just trying to do what comes to you.
And my thing is with a line of dialogue, you don't need to invent complicated plots with a song. You don't need to invent complicated lyrics. If the most you can think of is to go, I have a dog, la la la, la la la, and then just keep that pattern, keep it really simple and don't make it too hard on yourself. And that's not saying that these players aren't up to improving and getting really good, because I think they've all got really great talent. Don't try and run before you can walk, I guess.
The thing is, you can't be inspired faster and more effectively than you are. So you can't sit there and go, think harder, be inspired better.
Yeah.
So you might as well just do a solid job rather than freaking out that you're not.
And it's I guess it's like exercise. I mean, if I was to start doing push-ups now, I'd probably manage 2 or 3 and then collapse in a heap. But if I was to keep trying every day, I'd probably, by a couple of weeks' time, make it to 10 7. Before I dropped. No, I think I could make it to double digits. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I could.
Double digits?
After
we were told the audience was double digits the other week.
Oh, yeah.
It's Should double digits. Oh, Christ, that's not good.
Should we move on
and
to
she's
the
like,
week?
No, it's 25. It's like, oh, okay. So what you're saying is when you say it's double digits, it's between 10 and 99.
Yeah. There's a whole range of different audience descriptions.
And that was our audience for The Wake.
Yes.
Impro Mafia's first official long form show.
In a while.
Well, we never officially done a long... Oh, no, wait. There was two at a festival that I wasn't that I didn't attend. At the Straight Outta Brisbane Festival.
Right.
We
did. Was that on? Is that still on? Does that still go on?
We got... Someone shafted us at the last one, I think. They didn't accept our application.
But does it still run, or?
Dunno.
Is it a yearly thing, or?
Maybe it's somewhere out of Brisbane.
Biannually, or?
Maybe they're now to fuck off out of Brisbane. Don't fucking come back.
By straight out of Brisbane, they meant we're going to raise enough funds so we can get
straight out of Brisbane.
Brisbane.
Nice. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. Comedy gold. So, The Wake. double digits. We ended up with 42 people. We were so impressed. That's not too bad. It was wonderful. It was a lovely, lovely
audience.
I'd be
happy to play in front of 42 people. I'd be happy to play in front of 120. But...
of course. 151 at the Arts Theatre. Let's see if we can fill it. Wouldn't that be great?
151 seats.
Yep. All up.
Where's the other one? Oh, there's some up top, aren't
there? There's 37 up top in the gallery.
Ah.
Yeah, 34, 37, something like that. And 110 or something.
We're waiting for that for Iron Improviser at the end of the year.
It'd be great if we could fill it. That'd be awesome.
Well, they do it down in Melbourne.
They do it down in Melbourne. They do a lot of things down in Melbourne, but then Melbourne's a different city and they're way ahead in terms of culture.
Well, that brings me to a point, because the wake is a long form.
Yep.
And long form is where you do a story that extends for 20, 30, 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always been my point of view that short form impro is for audiences and long form impro is for improvisers.
I disagree.
Yeah. Well, so would I now. But I always used to find that they were a little bit self-indulgent.
Yeah, but so's theatre, really.
So's theatre. People like theatre, apparently.
It depends on the type of theatre.
Mm.
I mean, you could go and see something that's self-indulgent, but it's still really amusing and still really entertaining and makes the audience laugh and have a good time. I mean, you might go and see something else that's really self-indulgent, but it's still bad. I mean, at the end of the day, we're not making our living by going... well, we're not making a living at all doing this, are we? But actors and the theatre world, you're not going out and fixing people's broken bones or planting seeds in fields. You're making a living through acting, which is an incredibly... you know, I believe it's a very important role to society to have actors and storytellers and all those sorts of things. But, you know, if a nuclear winter hit us tomorrow, we probably wouldn't need the actors that much.
Well, the Scientologists love them.
We need, yeah.
Scientologists are all about the actors. And I think that that's a... well, it's, the whole thing's a scam. But the thing is, if you're an actor and you're making, like, millions and millions of dollars and you see all these other people who are poor and are working really hard at doing really useful stuff, a part of you goes, oh, well, I don't really deserve this money. Then Scientology comes along and says, no, actors are the most important people.
Ah, like, so it's a way of offloading your own guilt.
Yeah, and these actors are like, really? We're that important and we do deserve all this money? And I go, yes. And if you could pay us some of that money, we'll keep telling you that.
It's probably not a bad theory.
Yeah.
I think it's important that societies do have storytellers and actors, and I obviously think it's very, very important. I wish more people would go.
We don't need it anymore. We've got the internet.
Well, this is what we're fighting, isn't it? We've got movies and, you know, to get people to live theatre is so much more difficult because they do have the choice of, well, I could download a TV show, watch a TV show, that outdated practice, go to a movie, listen to music. People seem still keen to go and see bands and things like that. Yeah. But in terms of getting people to come and see some theatre and, you know, and Brisbane's in a bit of a bad patch for theatre at the moment from what I understand in terms of numbers at various shows.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a couple of the big, like we went to see My Fair Lady the other night and they only were filling the downstairs area. Filling the galleries, the balconies. They just closed them off. It was a Wednesday night show, but you'd think for something like My Fair Lady.
Now, My Fair Lady is based on Pretty Woman, right?
Yeah. Cool. Except in this one, she's not a whore. Sorry, I don't like to use that word. That's my personal policy to not use that word.
Has Audrey Hepburn ever played a whore?
Now, I should know this. No, I don't know. She probably has. Elizabeth Taylor has.
Mm.
Yeah. Marilyn Monroe played like a, you know, sort of a dancer type in Bus Stop, a, you know, entertainer of cowboys and gold mines.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of cabaret singer style thing.
You've got a big interest in Marilyn Monroe, don't you?
I do, yeah.
Mad Kino.
A lot more when I was younger. Yeah. It sort of faded when I realised I probably wouldn't grow up to be as pretty and as talented as she was.
Dead.
Well, I haven't reached 36 yet, and that's when she died. So,
really? Oh, yeah. I thought she was much younger.
No. I mean, she was still young. She was very young. You know, she wasn't Kurt Cobain, Jimi Hendrix level. Yeah. Young. She's 27.
River Phoenix.
He was younger, I think.
He was very young.
23 or something.
Something like that.
What were we talking about?
The Wake.
Yes.
Impro Mafia's first long form in a really long time.
Why are we dancing around it? Did we not like it or something?
No. I mean, we had a great time.
We did.
All of the performers came off and was like, yes, this is what impro is.
It was really good because we'd had several rehearsals, which is probably an interesting thing we could talk about for a podcast.
Yep.
Rehearsing impro.
Heavens
above.
Because
there's jamming and there's
practicing.
Yeah.
Not really rehearsing.
Well,
that would...
yes and no. I mean, we were rehearsing the format.
Yeah, that's true.
We were practicing, yes, but we were actually rehearsing the format and we made certain creative decisions through that process, mm-hmm. which is what rehearsing is. So, and I think it was really, really good because we had the first rehearsal where we did it and we ended up with a very dark, you know, a good timed story and quite a well-connected story. about Simon Chesterfield.
Yeah.
But quite dark in that he'd been a nasty guy, or no, Wade's character was the nasty guy or something, and there were drugs involved and mm-hmm. taking advantage of mentally ill women and all sorts of weird...
Oh, that's right, yeah, a little, princess.
Yeah, yeah, mm. I was playing a character who thought she was an actual princess.
That was really fun. So, and Simon was a psychologist.
Yeah, but then it ended up that he was taking advantage of her.
No, so, it ended up that he was in love with her.
Oh, that's right. It was odd. It was dark.
It was very dark. We watched the end and went, wow, that was really good. It wasn't very funny.
Yeah, and so we all went away and had a think about it and came back a few days later to have a second rehearsal. And we all kind of came out with, you know, well, what do we want to achieve with the second one? Funnier, basically, lighter, have moments of lightness. I mean, obviously at Awake, you can't escape moments of darkness, but to actually bring in some light and shade and to bring in more humour and to make the flashback scene funnier and be able to incorporate a lot more humour. And the second one we did, the second rehearsal we did, was amazing. Mm. We were all laughing so much off stage.
Yeah.
Because it turned out that the character, Simon, was this incredibly naive young soldier who wound up in North Korea being brainwashed by Kim Jong-il. And it just was this humorous, and because Wade's character was a plastic surgeon, it turned out that one of the guests at the wake was Kim Jong-il in his new face. So it was Dave Massingham with a cane sort of, you know, wandering around.
And
going,
I think the tone for that one, like, we all went, well, we wanted it to be a bit funnier and have, like, slightly more obvious characters. And Greg hit the stage and was just like, darling! And we're like, yep, that's what we're...
He was playing a bisexual CIA agent with a taste for kabuki theatre. and so we came off, so we were all laughing so much while playing that scene. We came away and finished it going, that was really excellent. That was, you know, it was so funny and really added in those extra elements. So when it came time for the wake itself, I think what we ended up with was a sort of a middle ground where we did have a lot more humour and lightness, but we didn't have as much silliness. We did have a psychopathic ventriloquist doll, which was...
Yeah, well, it got a bit sillier than it has before too. Like in the second one, we had brainwashing, and that's a kind of a standard sitcom slash drama type tool.
Yeah.
But then in this one, we had obviously evil dolls and telepathy.
But
and
it was
stuff.
It
so
was
it
kind
was
of
another couple of steps.
Yeah, but it was matched in because Greg's character, who had the evil ventriloquist doll, which was actually I think the Pink Panther we found backstage.
Yeah.
We found a Pink Panther, and so Greg was Pink Panther soft toy and was moving it about, and his nickname was Captain Awesome. But Greg, it was one of those questions, interesting questions that got brought in was the ventriloquist doll real or was it, you know, Greg's character who was the psycho?
Yeah.
And so they had moments of incredible drama where Greg was like in the psychiatric ward and being told by Simon, who you played, that he couldn't be a part of your comedy double act anymore and he was too crazy and you were letting him go. So there were actual moments of seriousness countered by...
I got feedback that people loved those moments.
They were
really excited about seeing the story occur. And that's why people was possibly a little bit disappointed that certain elements of the story got dropped because we just had too much on our mind.
It is a difficult thing to do. And obviously we'll take feedback of what we did and what we could improve and we'll put it into the next one.
Mm.
In terms of we were keeping records backstage of who was doing what. But because we were a 5-person cast working with the... essentially at least one or two people on stage at all time.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to actually...
And you're trying to listen to figure out whether you're needed in a moment.
Exactly. So it's very difficult. It's improv to have a powwow backstage and work out, you know, oh, well, I'm actually related to this person like in this way. And, you know, this scene's actually taking place 10 years in the past. Write that down. So things do get dropped and things don't get picked up. And I guess what you're dealing with is that we as players will drop stuff and not notice because we've moved on.
Mm.
But audience members... will notice things that haven't been brought back, and
I felt when I had my attention directed to that. Someone went, "Oh, wasn't there something about an opium problem?" And I'm like, "Oh shit, yeah, there was a whole thing that I set up and then never remembered again, and some plan and not being able to pay. Oh god, yes."
But to be fair, I think there's a lot of X-Files type dramas that set up a lot of things that then conveniently disappear, and you go, "Whatever happened to this thread?" So it's one of those things, unless you boil it right down to about 3 small plot lines, I mean, you're never going to remember everything.
See, I tend to like that in film, where there's like little elements that you don't get told about. Like The Fifth Element, where they walk into the spaceport, and there's just a huge mountain of garbage, and it's not really explained why it's there.
I don't even remember that.
Yeah, they walk in, and that bit where she's like, multipass.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, and the woman just like goes,
did you go gaga at the multipass, like every other red-blooded male?
the at
Mila Hohovic. When she goes, Multipass! Multipass! And everyone goes, she's so cute and hot and kicks ass and it's a killing machine, but she's so cute.
I just love that entire film.
It's quite a good film.
So colourful and yet dystopian.
Maybe we should do a futuristic Wake of Simon Chesterfield. We'd need some special effects.
The deletion of Simon Chesterfield 2.0.
I'll have to lose weight if I'm to fit into Mila Hohovic's bandages. You know, she's in, like, bandages.
Mm-hmm. To cover up the breasts that aren't there.
Yeah. In the future, we'll only be wearing bandages.
I'm only wearing bandages right now.
So, I think The Wake, it was a really, really great first start. The audience seemed to enjoy it. We started the show. What was also a really good element was the Armando style of short games and stories that we used.
I love that.
As the first half, which...
You get a word from the audience, any word, and then that would inspire the performer, the solo performer, to a story about their life. And you just tell a story about something that had actually happened. And then the other performers would be listening to that and would take an element of that story to create a scene. And I think there was only one
story. So a word inspires a story, inspires a scene.
Yeah. So I love that notion of that sort of quantum
improv.
Quantum cascade of information where... Well, I'm fascinated by improv because entire scenes can change based on a single word being one word or another word or a mistaken word.
Yeah.
So I always wonder if with this multiverse thing, how there's another universe splitting up at every single decision where there'd be like an infinite amount of interesting scenes.
Yeah. It just one scene would have an infinite amount of different how it
go to
out.
A parallel universe. And then there was a scene that started about a duck, but went off in an entire direction.
So when
direction.
I was in Edinburgh, just to, you know, talk up Edinburgh and the scene about doing the elephant up the bottom.
Yep.
That could have had a whole different level of... It could have been art in a parallel.
As Doctor Who says, some things can be changed, some things are locked down.
So you think the elephant...
Some
the
tragedies can't be changed.
I probably should stop talking about that. People will get bored. But I'm still in disbelief. So the Armando really worked well and people enjoyed it. And we did have an interesting audience participation session when I asked for a sort of an embarrassing mishap. And someone in the crowd, who I'd like to know who it was, because I'm not sure...
It was a friend of my goth groupies.
Ah, yeah. Dan's goth groupies. Yeah. Do they listen to this podcast?
I hope not.
Oh, really?
They're going to hate the fact that they call them that.
Dan's goth groupies. You know who... Are they goths or are they emos?
You know what? I thought that... They're genuine, pleasant individuals.
Oh, no, they are. They're lovely. And
they shouldn't be segregated into a group.
No. I've spent the last... what have I spent the last half hour talking about how we're fat geeks, except for you? You skinny bastard.
Skinny geek.
But the rest of us are all fat geeks. We've got skinny geeks and fat geeks. I'm not above insulting us. I'm just saying that, yes.
Indeed.
I don't think they're...
Now, they brought a friend of theirs along who was a little bit drunk.
Really?
Yeah.
Would not have picked
he
that.
He had a couple.
Went on to tell this amusing anecdote about waking up in a women's toilet wearing leopard print stockings.
Yeah.
And it kept going on, and I was...
The worst part was that it was fairly entertaining for the audience. The audience was laughing, and so we kept getting more power from that.
Yeah.
And backstage, we're like, oh, God, it's getting away from us.
It was an odd situation, because it was while I was attempting to tell a story, and I was getting distracted, and you know, obviously you're trying to pick out an element of this convoluted story. Well, do I go with some leopard print tights? Do I go with the toilet? Do I go with being drunk? What do you pick? And he just kept going, so... It was amusing for me in the end because I couldn't see him. I was just in a lone spotlight and I couldn't see anyone in the audience. All I could hear was his voice and then audience laughter. And so I think I made a comment at one point about, you know, thank you very much. So I just put on the confused face, which I think was entertaining for the audience, but I don't know. Cause
it was all working.
I couldn't see it.
But we're backstage, we were so worried that it was just about to all fall on its ass.
Oh, no. I didn't have that feeling that it would fall on its ass. I just had the feeling of, what am I going to do out of this? Like, what element do I pick to tell a story about? Because what I say is not going to be as entertaining as what's just happened between me and this guy. That's what this, if anything, the story is about his story and the fact that he's now telling it to me, that's become the story. So for me to go on and tell another story is somewhat redundant.
Yeah.
So I think I made it something very quick and then we moved on. And then you, of course, came out after that and said something like, so audience, you know how it goes. You give me one word and that's all. And the audience got that too. So it really switched on audience who seemed to enjoy the show. So fingers crossed that we will do it again. And we've got another long form coming up, not next show, the show after.
Yeah.
Which is...
We've got another show at the Arts Theatre tomorrow week.
Isn't that crazy? How did that happen? It's Her Majesty's Improvisers. Yeah. So
someone else is on top of that? Because I haven't heard much about it.
Yeah, Wade's been in contact.
Okay.
Vaguely. I'm in the bad books with Wade at the moment.
Yeah.
By the time this podcast comes out, hopefully it'll be sorted.
Yeah.
I'm not Wade's favourite person, I don't think. I think it's because we didn't win anything in the romp.
Didn't we?
No. We came 168, though. And I was like, they're like 170 teams. But no, they were well over 700.
Still.
So, no, we got nothing. I would have called you if there'd been something, but we got nothing.
Yeah, I suppose so. I didn't get an email. I've been getting emails going, it'll be tomorrow.
Oh, really?
It'll be tomorrow. It'll be tomorrow.
No.
And then nothing.
I didn't get an email either. It was one of those things where you have to go and check the website. And I think they probably would have emailed
you
the top people.
You are a big loser.
They probably would have emailed the top people, but not bothered about all us plebs. But yeah, so.
That's disappointing.
I know. I was so bummed.
Yeah.
Because we'd run around so damn hard.
So much effort.
But
this
you
is
know.
The Brisbane romp.
The Brisbane City romp.
It was some sort of big scavenger hunt.
Which we probably should mention because it was you and Wade and Greg and I plus Aurelie and Susan.
Yep.
And formed this team just in the friends and family
yep.
section of the romp. But it was on the day of the wake of Simon Chesterfield. So we went down and had this 4-hour dash around the city solving clues.
I was very worried about that too.
And then we came.
I'm using up all my adrenaline for the show.
We came back here. To the evil villainous lair and had some evil villainous chicken nuggets and chips, except for you had cereal for your diet.
You've got to get it, your brain is an organ and it's like training for a triathlon.
Yeah.
You're training for a triathlon.
Yep.
You'd practice your running.
That's right.
And you'd give yourself food that made your muscles build up.
Yep.
You want your brain to work at
100%. It's true.
You put the right fuel in, you get the right stuff out.
Right fuel. That's
none
right.
of that Pepsi Max for me, thank you very much.
Yeah. No, Wade was too busy drinking the Pepsi Max.
Yeah, he won't let me near it anymore.
Wade has like an addiction to my Pepsi Max.
Yeah.
Because Greg and I are quite happy to admit that, you know, yeah, we drink Pepsi Max. It's generally the only drink apart from water in our house.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some cordial, maybe some orange juice, but that's about it. And so that's our soft drink of choice.
It was very exciting when you guys actually realized, oh, we do entertain. Let's get some coffee and tea.
Yeah. It just never occurs in my head to offer people coffee and tea because I would never
drink it yourself.
It. So it just, you know, that's what
for
life
someone
is like.
For people who love history and the British Empire history in particular, I'm amazed that neither of you two drink tea. Like that's all. That's like 30%.
I don't drink gin and tonics either. But you know.
Oh God.
I have sugar. Brits love sugar.
Yeah.
And I like Cadbury's. That's English.
I had. Tomato on toast for breakfast this morning.
That's revolting.
And I was eating it and I was like, oh, there's something wrong with this tomato. It's kind of tastes sort of, it's not chemical.
It's a beetroot.
It tastes kind of weird and sweet and odd.
It's a choco.
And so I put some more salt on it to negate that. And
it's
I bit into it and I was like, this is even worse. It's really sweet. Oh no, I've been putting sugar on my tomato, not salt.
Yeah.
And that.
Are you blonde under all of that?
Blonde right now. And time! As we death spiral into the most bizarre communication known to man. You have been listening to And Time. You've been listening to Natalie Bohensky. Natalie's blog is girlclumsy.com.
Please read it.
My blog is blogblog.blogblogblog.com at blogblogblog.
He's on Facebook.
Theme music is by David Peachy. Hosting for And Time is proudly presented by CivicNet Web Design.
I love everyone.
Is that what you were hinting at?
No, I wasn't even hinting. I just don't even want to contemplate that in case. Okay, if I said it aloud, it's on the record.
Yep.
It's on the record now, Dan. It's on the record. Someone will find it. Someone will hack your computer now, Dan. I didn't know anything.
Dun, 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 dun.
And this is where you put in the secret bit.
Yeah.
That you cut out and then put it at the end. Wouldn't it be ironic if you actually used this bit as the secret bit and put it at the end? Because it's already at the end because we're recording it last. So you would cut it and then put it at the end. You wouldn't even need to edit it.
Keep talking, man.
Dun, 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 dun.